driving the lane, crosses up Van Hoolen, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Katie Sykes for three.
No, that's good.
She got it. Katie Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros. With live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Friends, enemies, anyone in between, welcome back to another edition of the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND. I'm Leo Stoddard, your sports director here at WZND, and we're once again back in triple threat formation. My regular co-host of the Quad City Storm of WZND's production department is Joey Dwyer.
And Leo, question for you before we start. No, am I a friend, enemy, or am I in between?
It really depends on the day, Joey. You are... Today, you're more friend, but other days this week, you've been closer.
Let's go.
And the third voice on our show is our producer of TV10 of the Naperville Trolley Company. It is Mr. Joe Kennedy.
Yes, sir. You know, this week I didn't get a low-key yes, sir in during your intro, Leo. So we're nice and clean this week.
Yeah, I appreciate that. But before we get started, I think we should do a little bit of weekend recap because it was a big weekend for WZND, celebrating our 41st reunion. It was a weekend that... For me and Joey, at least, a lot of planning went into it. A lot went into it, and a lot of people at WZND did some really great work. Joey gave a great speech at the reunion. It was just a really cool event, and I think it was just a culmination of a lot of good things that happened this semester.
It was a really good time. Shout out to the Normal Marriott for hosting us, and the best part about the whole reunion. So it's our Hall of Fame inductees are going in. We have all these former ZNDers there, a bunch of heartfelt speeches. And then right next door, we've got
awesome.
A sorority formal going on. So
really?
One of the Hall of Fame, I think it was during Mark Grody, like Bears reporter Mark Grody got inducted in the Hall of Fame. He's given a speech. And during his speech, you hear gas pedal, like the bass of gas pedal coming through like the divider next door. So it's just like, literally during his speech. So it was incredible. But yeah, it was a super fun weekend. Really cool to be a part of it.
And I think there were times, faculty advisor Deb Lesser did a great job coordinating that. I think there were times during the week where she wanted to kill me and Joey. She resisted that urge, especially when Joey was jumping from down flights of stairs. But I think Deb just really showed why she's the best in the business that week and put on an awesome event.
Yeah, Leo and I are definitely, we're definitely like the comic relief of stressful things that happen down here at ZND. We are not the go get them, do it kind of guys.
Absolutely not. But we are the go get them, do it guys when it comes to hosting sports radio shows on this station, because we have a great show coming for you tonight. We're going to have Ryan Cermak of national accolades from the Redbird baseball team coming on the show in just a few minutes. Andy Petrashevsky is going to come on, talk some White Sox baseball. We're going to talk some NFL draft, but starting things off, let's talk some Redbird hoops, because it's been a couple weeks since we've done this, and it's interesting.
A lot has changed.
Basically, if you can dribble a basketball, I think there might be a roster spot for you on the Illinois State Redbird men's basketball team, because they have 7 players in the transfer portal. And I know this is common when teams are going through a coaching change. This is part of the process, but this is just really interesting, because some of the guys... It'll be interesting where they set up. I mean, namely Antonio Reeves, seeing what happens with him, because he has some options, and I'm sure we'll get into that. But
this is
the end of one era and the start of a new one for Redbird Hoops, and it's just a very strange time, I guess.
And it's just start off a clean slate for Coach Pete, and I mean, you're saying it, Leo, this always happens. But just looking at the guys that are leaving, it's literally all they're scoring. And right now, coming into the program, you still have guys on the roster, such as like Mark Freeman, Liam McChesney. Freeman, not even quite sure yet either with like the COVID year. I don't think anything's been said about a couple of these seniors on the team that are still technically on there. Like Kendall Lewis is another one. So it's like, it's really interesting to see what type of guys there are coming in, because they do got the one transfer coming in, Colton Sandage, the first blown out player on the team since 2009 when his brother was on the squad, Brandon.
And that's cool, because we talked about it. We talked about back when Mueller was still the coach. We talked about it when Peden took over, is that you need to recruit better within a few miles of Bloomington Normal, whether that's Champaign, Springfield, Bloomington Normal, Peoria. Like, you have to get those recruits, and Standage is one of those. You missed out on him the first time around. Now he's playing his last year at home. So at least they'll have that start and try to get some kind of local ties down.
And he's a good player, too.
Yeah.
He comes from Western Illinois.
A thousand points.
Played, started almost every game last year. And it's a good get for the Birds, especially with how much they've lost into the portal, seeing that they finally got someone from the portal instead of leaving into the portal. So
yeah,
that's positive news there for the Birds.
And it's looking at the names in the portal. So let's rattle them off here, because you have Antonio Reeves, Cy Chapman, Howard Fleming Jr., Amon Washington, Jaden Johnson, Josiah Strong, and Abdu Jai. You know, when you hear that Reeves and Strong are in the portal, you think, okay, maybe, you know, Fleming or Washington can step into that role, or Cy Chapman's going to take it over. But then those second tier guys start transferring too, and that's when you realize this is a full, it's a rebuild, basically, that this program is starting fresh.
And like Joe said, it kind of comes with the territory of getting a new coach, but man, it's going to be a tough, tough sledding for ISU basketball. And the transfer portal has been kind to them. There have been a couple players that have been rumored who maybe are going to come back or come to ISU, but losing your two best offensive producers is going to be a challenge.
And I don't want to assume anything or like put anything on like hot wire or whatever, but like, having all these guys going to the portal, they've had a good amount of time to talk to Coach Pete, and I guess they just really don't maybe mix together well. Maybe they just want to – maybe the vision is just completely different what Pete has right now. Maybe he could have even told him, like, yeah, we're going in a different direction.
Yeah.
Like, it's just the way the game goes, and coaches need their own guys. They need their guys for the style of play. And a lot of these guys were great for ISU last year, but look at what they did. They really didn't do much the whole season long.
And that's a big thing in collegiate basketball as a whole, is there are so many Division I teams. You can kind of, if you have the talent, you can kind of pick and choose which coaches you like and which systems you like. And Dan Moeller is probably very different from Ryan Pede. That's probably what ISU was looking for because they were unhappy with the performance under Moeller. But that does leave a lot of the players alienated, not having the coach or the system that they came here to play under.
Yeah, and I think that's where the players, why I think the transfer portal, a lot of people, especially the mid-majors, want to complain about it, say it's a bad thing. But I think it empowers the players, gives them the opportunity to go somewhere where they're wanted, where their skills can be needed. Because if this was, you know, 5-10 years ago, they'd probably be players like Abdu Jai would probably be stuck here, that they'd come here and just be benched then when the new coach changes.
Because the waiver, like, priority or whatever.
But now he can go find somewhere where he can actually be appreciated, because he's been a player I've really liked watching in his time here. He hasn't developed into a star or anything, but he's had his moments. There have been games,
it's just
a Valpo game where he had a really good game, hit a three-pointer in a clutch time at the second half. He had some good games. He's been fun to watch, and I'd like to see him go to a program where he could be appreciated, because he's been it was always nice to the media, always seemed like he tried hard, so it'd be cool to see him get to flourish. And the transfer portal was made for players like that.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking about the portal and everything. The school, when you are leaving, they have to grant you, like, immediate eligibility. And I'm assuming ISU will probably allow these guys to go play right away. But that's just an also interesting factor you got to think about. And looking at the guys they're trying to put into the program right now, I've talked to, all of them are guards. I haven't really looked at any big man coming into the program. And especially with Cy Chapman leaving, everything needs to be filled up right now. But there are a couple of guys that they've been talking about inside the program, so that's going to be interesting to see what they do with that and building on off the Sandage signing.
And, I mean, certainly if there's one thing that the Redbirds have going for them, it's they do have a couple of good big men still on the roster. Liam McChesney isn't going anywhere as of right now. Ryan Schmidt, who I was actually pretty impressed with, I don't know if he's going to pick up that COVID fifth year.
Yeah.
So that is a big question. But if Ryan Schmidt comes back and you still have Liam McChesney making the strides that he did, and then you have Alex Kodov, if he takes his fifth year, there are a couple of pieces.
They still have the bigs, kind of.
And again, that's questions. Like, are these guys going to pick up those fifth years and play another year here? And so right now, ISU basketball just needs to answer some of those questions before they really start recruiting guys. Because if you're going to lose Kotov and you're going to lose Schmidt, it's really going to be a challenge to fill out the roster at all.
And they're not the only Valley school going through this right now. This season, and it happens every year, where there is a record number of Valley players in the transfer portal.
Yeah.
So the conference is getting hit hard. Murray State is going to be a completely different team
next
season.
It's kind of like similar, too. I mean, they left, their coach left, but now they're coming in, and they've had success, a lot of it, in the past 10 years. Now they have pretty much a whole new roster.
Yeah.
That's going to be crazy to see.
So they're not the only school in the Valley going through it. Valpo went through it last year, and they put together a formidable squad this year too. So like, it's just, that's, I think that's life as a mid-major. And it's going to be interesting to see how Peden adjusts with that. Cause I mean, he's made some good hires to his coaching staff too. Really filled that out. Bringing back Rob Judson, the most recent one. That's a name I'm intrigued with because he's been here. He was an assistant on Dan, or not for Dan Mueller's staff for 1 year, but he was in ISU for 07 to 2013. So he had a little overlap with Mueller. But so he's been in the area. He knows how to recruit here. And so he's from Central Illinois. So that could really help the staff too, having somebody like that around. And just the rest of this coaching staff feels like, and they could help with this recruiting, bring in some guys from the portal. They have connections to the Power Five. I think it'll be interesting just how many transfers the Redbirds try to bring in.
And even like recruiting, you're talking about Judson. Last year at DePaul, he brought in one of their biggest recruits in a long time. And a lot of his recruiting has been inside this area. A lot of these people that Peden has brought in, like their main responsibility was like the Midwest recruiting and stuff like that. So like we've been saying, like that's a good look. That's a good outlook for what could potentially be happening, but only time will tell. We can't really assume much right now in these guys coming in a new position, working with new guys, new coaches and such. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be fun. And it's also going to be fun to see where Antonio Reeves is going, guys, because there's a lot of teams that are interested. He visited Nebraska, and then now this weekend he's at Kentucky.
That's a good school, right?
That's a very good basketball school. I mean, they got good. They always have good recruiting, but I don't know if Coach K or Coach Cal can get through to the big game.
I don't know. I heard St. Peter's was better. So.
St. Peter's took that.
Absolutely. But that's going to be fun to watch Antonio Reeves because it's kind of the same mindset with DJ Horn last year. Like, even though they're leaving ISU, you root for them. You want to see them do well, represent the Birds on the big stage. Like, we've seen him grow and develop the past few years. Like, you want to see him do well. And I'm excited to see what his next step is. But that's all we have for this segment. When we come back, we're going to hop in with an interview with Illinois State baseball outfielder Ryan Cermak. That's next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Okay.
This is Illinois State infielder Owen Miller, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. Leo Stoddard, Joey Dwyer, Joe Kenny, and now we're joined by Ryan Cermak of the Illinois State baseball team. Ryan's been on a massive tear the past few weeks, picking up 4 National Player of the Week award honors. I guess, Ryan, to start things off, has that set into you? Does that feel like it's real that you've been recognized nationwide as the player of the week for what you did the past couple weeks?
Yeah, I mean, it's still crazy. I'm getting a bunch of texts from old buddies just congratulating me, and it's fun seeing all the awards.
Who's been, like, the most off-the-wall person that's reached out to you? Like, any celebrities or anything reaching out to you the past week?
Any former Birds?
I haven't had any former celebrities, but I keep in touch with a few pro guys that have reached out to me.
Oh, the moment when I realized that you were making a big splash nationwide was, the national awards are nice, but there's this kid who comes up on my TikTok for you page who like recaps the week in college or baseball every week, and you popped up on it a couple times, and I was like, okay, like, cause you never see Illinois State represented anywhere when you're talking about national media. And so he's like, and Ryan Cermak hit his 13th home run. I was like, oh my God, like, I know that guy. He's a Redbird. So that was really cool. That's when I kind of realized that you were popping off the way you were.
Yeah. I've actually seen that guy's TikToks and I haven't seen that one about me yet.
Yeah. Okay. I'll send it to Scott. I'll find the one and send it to you.
I'm gonna have to look into that. No, because fun to watch.
I got so excited when you were on there. I swear.
But just talking about these accolades and maybe potential records that you could be breaking here this season, does that put pressure towards you? And how do you handle that?
I mean, it's still a game. I'm just trying to go up to the plate and hit the ball hard every time. Whatever they throw at me, I don't care. I'm just trying to hit it hard.
Yeah. And how do you, over the offseason, because you just had a big power surge, I believe, coming into this year, did you try to change anything up at the plate or anything change in the offseason?
I mean, my hands were really high up before, and there were some talks that I couldn't get to certain pitches, and I sort of calmed everything down, and I think that's really opened up everything for me.
Mm-hmm. And looking at the game against Western Illinois, where you had grand slams and back-to-back innings, 3 home runs, you know, doing something that no ISU player done since Paul DeJong. When you're at the plate in that situation with the bases loaded, are you going for power or were you just trying to put the bat on the ball, see what happened? Or what's your mindset when you're coming up with the bases juiced like that?
I mean, walking up with the bases juiced, I mean, of course, you got so of course it comes to your mind the first time. And he gave me a hanger the first pitch and I took it. And I was like, okay, if he throws me that pitch again, I'm going to hit it out of here. And I did. And then the second time up, Of course, I think, wow, this will be crazy if I go back-to-back Grand Slams. And it got to two strikes, and I was just like, oh, man, now I got to sort of protect. Yeah. And I just got a hold of another one, and it was pretty crazy.
So when you go up to bat every time, are you thinking that you're just going to jack one over the fence?
No.
It seems like that's what the mindset is.
I'm just trying to hit the ball hard, and, of course, if I get the pitch that I know what to do with it, like, I'll elevate it, and I've been – better at that this year.
Yeah. Baseball is such a mental game too. So when you're on a hot streak like this, do you even really think about it? Like, do you think about the big picture? Or are you more of like a one at bat at a time kind of guy?
One at bat at a time. I mean, I can't let the last at bat dictate my next at bat. Like, if it's a home run, my previous at bat, I can't be thinking I'm on top of the world. I gotta think it's a new time up. Or if I strike out the previous time, I think, hey, it's a new at-bat and go from there.
And talking about your approach at the plate this season, you're being used in the leadoff role. How is that different than maybe hitting other spots in the lineup? Because you don't get to see a pitcher's first few pitches of the game. You're the one that's kind of setting that tone. How do you approach that to start off games?
I started off in the three hole this year, and I could sort of get a feel for it. I would have the one and two hitters coming back to me saying how his stuff is moving. But I grew up hitting leadoff pretty much up until eighth grade. And I've sort of brought that back and just trying to do damage off the first pitch.
And you talk about growing up, you played infield for your whole life pretty much until college.
I never played infield. I never played outfield until last year.
And then you won Defensive Player of the Year. I mean, how do you go through that position change like that and just go out there and become the best defensive player in the Valley?
I don't know.
It's kind of crazy.
it took a lot of hard work. I remember as a kid, I'd always ask my dad to hit me fly balls, and he has a bad back, and he'd be like, I don't know if I can, but he would. And so I guess I had a little experience with 20 fly balls he hit me.
So then talk about that change from infield to the outfield. How did that come about? Was that Coach Holmes' idea? Did you start working on that? What led to that switch in positions?
Well, at the time last year, I was struggling at the plate, and he sort of took me out one game to sort of calm me down. And there's an opening in the outfield, and he put me in right field. And actually, I think it was the very first play hit to me. There's a line drive slicing away from me. I lay out. Completely miss it. Wasn't even close. But he loved the way I went about it, and I eventually moved over to center field.
So, like, how long does it take you to get comfortable then when you go out into the outfield? What was the point where you're like, okay, I think I got the hang of this now?
I think it was just taking live reads and practice and sort of running balls down, knowing my speed, knowing what balls I can get to, stuff like that.
I mean, so now you've pitched, you play outfield, you play infield. Have you thought about maybe catching this year? Do like the whole little trifecta? You could play everywhere.
That'd be pretty cool, but I don't know if my knees can take it.
Yeah, but just talking about the pitching, how has that been this year? And maybe could we possibly see you at that spot again this year?
Possibly. I'm not built for a pitcher right now. Like, pitchers have a different throwing routine than infielders and outfielders. And I think it could be a possibility, but it would be further down the line.
Do you have fun pitching? Or?
Oh, yeah. It brings back so many memories. You just get to control the game.
Yeah, definitely.
And so then talking about Coach Holm, how he was the one that moved you to the outfield, how he sat you down in a time when you were struggling. How's your relationship been with him? Because, and we've had him on the show a few times, he's just a really cool character, has a lot of good stories. How's that been, like, learning from someone who's made it all the way to the majors and then now is coaching in college?
Yeah, I owe a lot of my success to him. He's always had faith in me. He put me on the bench, but he always knew, like, I was going to be back out there playing. And I think that just brightened up everything for me.
And one of the things when we had him on, he says he likes to do his cook for the players because he feels like it allows them to open up. So what's maybe the best thing Coach Holmes made for you if you've had that experience?
We go over sometimes and we'll have a good barbecue.
Okay.
We'll have a nice barbecue.
I think that's the same thing Schubert said to us too. His barbecue is incredible.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't remember what Hart said to us. I think probably something similar. Yeah. The heart attack. Yeah.
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 But regardless, it sounds like Coach Holmes' barbecue is something that we got to try.
Yeah, no, I'll put it on.
And so I talked to Kyle Sobran a little bit ago, and last semester big karate guy.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen his karate skills? Have they ever been have to be put in place? Maybe a brawl's going out there? Or you guys got into a little beef argument?
I don't know. He might be all talk. He says he has a black belt, but I haven't seen much.
He's never showcased it?
He'll do a little, like, 360 kick once in a while, but I think a few guys could do that, too, on the team. So
Yeah, I can't imagine, like, a bench-clearing brawl and Kyle Silverado's coming out just, like, doing spinning kicks down the field. That's something I'd pay to see, actually. Yeah. So if somebody gets beaned against Valpo this weekend, maybe give him a little nudge. Be like, hey, get out there. Like,
all right, we'll go to the dojo. Yeah.
And so talking about other teammates, who controls the music in the locker room or on bus trips? Who gets the say in that? Because we've talked to other Illinois State athletes, and it always seems to be like the seniors or maybe some of the star players get that say. So who on the baseball program is in charge of that?
Aiden Huggins has been on there recently. It has been Kyle Soberano. But
I remember him the same.
Sometimes his vibes aren't the same as everyone else's vibes, so we had to take it away from him. Right now, it's Aiden Huggins.
Does he bring like Cali vibes or something?
He brings a lot of Cali vibes, a lot of EDM, which I enjoy. So
I don't know many California people, but I always hear like, you know, they're pretty different personalities than anyone else. Do you feel the same way? Because you guys have so many different California guys on the team.
Yeah, they're pretty much just laid back and, you know, just go with the flow type of vibe.
Yeah.
And maybe going back to the music, what's your walk-up song and why'd you pick that? Do you have a certain ritual behind that or a mindset, or is it you just kind of pick a random song and stick with it?
It's Walk Through by Rich Homie Quan.
Oh, yeah.
And how I got that was I didn't know what to pick, and actually Kyle Soberano, shout out, picked it for me, and he was just like, this goes hard. And I was like, it does go hard, so... It's that, yeah.
Follow the wave. But kind of going back to, like, this year, did you have a major goal you had set for it to this year, and has it changed now?
Yeah. I mean, it's just to win games. Mm-hmm. And it's been on and off for us right now, but I think we're on the right path with conference play.
Yeah.
And talking about some of those big non-conference wins, taking out Arkansas to start the year, beating Purdue, giving them their first loss of the season, even putting up 10 runs on Illinois. How did some of those big non-conference wins, what's it been like for that? Did you guys know you were capable of that? And then how do you celebrate after a win like that while still trying to focus on the next game?
Yeah, it just shows you what this team can really do. It shows that we can play against the quote-unquote big dogs, and we just got to act like every game is a game against Arkansas or Purdue or Illinois instead of, you know, just rolling into the next game.
So as you get ready to take on the rest of the Valley, is the mindset, are you guys looking towards a championship, or is it just we have to get through the Valley first?
Yeah, we're trying to win the Valley first, and we're trying to get a bid off of that into the playoffs, and you know, winning every series is our goal from here on out.
And just talking about looking around the Valley, who's someone on another Valley school that either last season or this season, whether that's a pitcher or a player you went up against, that you just really respect their game?
Yeah, he was actually the pitcher of the year last year for Indiana State. He's no longer there. He graduated. Can't remember his first name, but last name Guerrero.
Mm-hmm.
And he would just carve us up. He would carve everyone up.
And Indiana State, they had a really good year last year making the NCAA regionals. Is after going up against a team in conference play and then seeing them play in the postseason, do you kind of root for them? Do you root for the conference, or how's that mindset? Do you want to see them lose embarrassingly maybe?
it's hard to say. I mean, you just hope everybody stays healthy. And I'm honestly just looking for a good game.
Right.
I don't want to see a blowout or anything like that, or just a bad game. I want to see a good, like, hard-fought game.
And talking about players, you have a MLB player that maybe you modeled your game after as a kid, or you do now?
Now, after seeing him in the playoffs, I wasn't too big on him before, but Kiki Hernandez, it's not a main guy that people would say, so that's sort of why I like to say him.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any reason behind it? Just
I think he's just like a hard worker, a versatile player, and I think it's very relatable.
So talking about the MLB, obviously you're having a great run in your college career so far. What do the pro aspirations look like for you?
I mean, of course, it would be a childhood dream to go pro, and that's what I'm hoping to do after this year.
And, So, like, seeing Owen Miller go pro after his junior year maybe and having the success he's already had early on, does that give you some type of motivation maybe, or at least it, like, eases you seeing a guy from ISU being able to go do that?
Yeah, we have two guys in the bigs. I know of Paul DeJong, shortstop on the Cardinals, and now Owen Miller making a case right now. I think he's leading the league in doubles right now.
Yeah,
it's crazy. So, yeah, I mean, there's some good talent that has come out of Illinois State.
Mm-hmm. Let me talk about the pros, too, because obviously with the MLB lockout and stuff, different rule changes, we've talked about on the show before, too. If you were put as commissioner of Major League Baseball, what would be one thing you'd want to change or maybe add to the pro game?
Well, I know they've been talking about, like, robot umpires with the perfect strike zone. I don't know if I like that because I like a game of error. I like a game of adjusting to certain umpires, and that's what I've always known.
I think those two agreed with that.
Yeah, I do.
I came from like the soccer standpoint because they do like this whole video review stuff, and it's kind of like that. But I mean, it would cause a lot of chaos here in America.
I don't know, but I like Ryan saying, I like the how a pitcher kind of has to learn the strike zone.
Yeah,
I think you know that's just a big part of baseball.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And do you have like a good story about whether that's a bad call from an umpire or blowing up on an ump? Do you have a good ump story while we're on the topic?
Oh, man, do I have a good ump story? I don't know if I have one off the top of my head. No, I wish I did.
Do you have, like, a favorite Little League moment or just, like T-ball to eighth grade, like the best moment of growing up playing baseball?
Yeah, I do. It was a Mother's Day tournament. The championship was on Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. And my mom was there, of course. I hit a walk-off double into the gap for her, and that was pretty cool. I remember that well.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. It's pretty sweet. What did you do after that game? Did she take out for lunch or anything, or ice cream or anything?
Go do chores.
Where did you get her?
Yeah, I don't even remember. I just remember giving her flowers after the game.
That's pretty solid.
Yeah, it's like, it's congratulations now. The kitchen needs to get swept. Yeah. So.
So we hear from a lot of the players about you guys playing video games maybe on the bus ride or the bus trips and everything. Is there someone who's the best and someone who's just the worst from the team? Or how's that go?
I know Kyle Soberano always has his little Nintendo Switch. He's always playing on the bus with Chang and a few others. I think he's pretty good.
Okay, do you ever get in on the action or not?
No,
really?
I think they'd whoop me if I played, yeah.
So what do you like to do on the bus trips? Because obviously traveling in conference, that there's a lot of that. There's a lot of time to kill. Do you prepare for the next game? Do you do homework? What do you like to do to unwind on those rides?
I'll either, you know, watch YouTube, or if it's been a really long ride and other people want to play, we'll set up a little table and play cards and pass time by.
Nice.
All right. And one last question, because we are running out of time. And I'm always curious about this. So do you think if you were put into a bench warmer situation, right, where you take two guys from the team and yourself, do you think you could win the Little League World Series?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Hold on every pitch.
If you're playing the field, you're the only fielder, right? So you're taking up, what, seven positions, and then you got a pitcher and a catcher.
There's no way they could hit off, and you could bring in, like, Jared Hines as your pitcher.
All I'm saying is, like, it's a small strike zone. Like, if you get screwed by an ump, I don't know.
And all you got to do is throw one fastball at their head, and they're going to be freaked out the rest of the game, too. No, I agree.
It's fair. I'm just trying to play devil's advocate. I know you whoop them.
Who were the two guys you'd bring with you? Who would they be?
I think you said I bring Jared Hart, and I'd probably need another hitter, and that'd probably be Jake McCaw.
Yeah, nice. That would be a dominant trio.
Yeah.
So we'd like to thank Ryan for coming on the show. And a reminder, you can catch the baseball team all three games this weekend. We'll be on WZND. We'll have coverage of tomorrow's game against Valpo coming up at 4:50. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Andy Petroshevsky's going to join the show. That's next on The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Hi, this is Paul DeJong, former ISU Redbird, current St. Louis Cardinal. You're listening to Red Zone on WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone. Leo Stotter, Joey Dwyer, Joe Kenny, and now Andrew Petroshevsky of WZND's news and sports team comes on to the show. Andy P is going to talk about some White Sox with us because now we're a week into the season, and there might be overreactions, there might be underreactions, but it's great to have you on the show, Andy, and it's good to have another Sox fan here.
Yeah, man, I thank you guys for having me on. Tough act to follow. The guy.
Yeah, no pressure.
Follow the guy who's hit like 13 home runs in like three games, and meanwhile I lost Fortnite last night. You know. But yeah, thanks for having me on. Let's talk some White Sox baseball.
Yeah. So is there anything specific or like what do you want to get into here about the Sox season? Because it is a new season. Not a whole lot has happened, I guess, in the six games they've played.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. The record's 4-2 currently. They're in first place, which after six games doesn't matter that all that much. It's you want to win every game, but it's also like not even what is it? April? I forgot what day it was. April 14th.
You and Leo seem pretty similar about like the beginning of the season and stuff.
Yeah, I'm excited. I feel a lot better now. We lost today, but I feel better at this point in the season than I thought I would. I think that's just because of like the mass amount of injuries we had gone through already.
I mean, that's where I want to kind of start with, because you look at it. Garrett Crochet's done for the year. Lance Lynn hasn't pitched yet. Lucas Giolito leaves the first game with an injury. Yoan Moncada still has not played a game yet this year. Even A.J. Pollock getting a little banged up. Mm-hmm. And they're still 4-2. My mindset with April and May in the MLB is you just have to survive it. Stay as healthy as you can, get through that, and then in June, that's where you kind of see, okay, are we contenders? Are we pretenders right now? But right now, it's just the surviving part, and the fact that they're doing it, and facing a team like Seattle, taking two or three from them. Seattle's a respectable team. They shelled Robbie Ray a little bit last night, so it's good to see that they're doing things right while also just getting through these first couple weeks.
And so you're talking about the pitching, guys. I mean, it has to stay healthy, but you also lost Carlos Rodon with the White Sox. Yeah. Do you think that they could replicate what they had last year in the pitching rotation? Maybe could it even be better? Or what are your thoughts on that? Because right now the Sox do have a pretty top, high-caliber pitching staff.
Yeah. So with that, Rodon leaving, going to the Giants is obviously going to hurt us. Because our strength last year, throughout all our injuries, we were down Robert for 5 months. We were down Eloy for 5 months. Like it felt like half our starting lineup was gone. Our strength was pitching because we had four top line starters, including Rodon.
Yeah.
And then of course Dallas Keuchel was our fifth starter and still is our fifth starter. But I think we can try and fill like the void, because you imagine, you know, he threw 130 innings last year. So you have to replicate
that
Rodon. Yeah, Rodon threw 130 innings last year. So you have to replicate that somehow. And essentially Michael Kopech is the one who's supposed to take that spot, but this is his first year starting, or at least his first year starting back since coming back from injury last year. He was just a bullpen guy, so they're going to be careful with him. They're probably going to give him lots of rest, lots of time off. He probably will be lucky, honestly, if we get 120, 110 out of him.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of trying to find other spots.
I think looking at Kopech is that anything he does as a starter this year is a bonus, because he wasn't originally in the rotation. It's now after the injuries to Giolito and Lynn that he's coming in. So, like, whatever you do with him is a bonus this year. It's about him figuring out what his role is, because right now you look at his first start, I think it was against Detroit, where he had so many 3-2 counts, because I think he's used to coming out of the bullpen, just being able to throw gas, and then he needs to be able to use his other pitches as well to set up his fastball. So letting him learn through that, the stats might not look good, but it's all about him getting that experience, getting his experience as a starter, learning how to go deeper in ball games. So it might not look great at first, but I'm excited because he has looked so electric. When you saw him pitch in the blackout game back in the postseason against this Houston, he was awesome. Mm-hmm. So if he can replicate that in a starter's role, he's going to be a special talent and can do some great things. Mm-hmm. I think when you're talking about the rotation, who's going to fill that void left by Carlos Rodon, I think a lot hinges on Dylan Cease and his development this year, because he showed a lot of promise, but at times had looked wild, had a team high 13 wild pitches last year. Mm-hmm. He had 68 walks as well. But so if he can get things under control, be able to go deeper into ballgames, because he has some really good stuff, but it's all about that command. If the command is there for him, he could be a really special talent. Everybody wants to dunk on the Cubs for trading Eloy, and this isn't making fun of you and Cubs fans, Joe, but I think Dylan Cease could be the player from that trade that the Cubs regret giving up more, just because he's looked that good as a starting pitcher.
And especially getting pitchers, sometimes it's one of the most difficult positions.
It's hard to
pick. It easily is the most difficult thing to pick, because especially coming out of high school, those guys are already throwing their arm, and their arm can be thrown out, and it's very hard to go through the draft. So, I mean, Dylan Cease, that one was a big, big letdown coming from a Cubs fan. That one got away from us, but he's doing well, or he has a chance to do well in a Sox uniform, and he didn't have to move far at all, so good for him.
And look at what the White Sox have. One thing they've consistently done well is been developing starting pitching.
Yeah.
You know, even looking at Chris Sale, Jose Quintana, and then now looking at what they were able to do with Lucas Giolito, Carlos Rodon too. So Cease, if he follows in that trajectory, they could be in a really good spot. I think also when you're talking about the Sox, you just have to talk about, do we have MVP watch already with Luis Robert? Is he, maybe let me correct that. Maybe not MVP watch, Hall of Fame watch for Luis Robert, okay. Just what he's been doing the first six games of the year. Where are we? How high are we on?
Remember that Luis energy Robert? Last year with Yermin Mercedes?
Yeah, but he's a different player. He's
I know, I know.
Luis Robert's a real major league player. Yermin was a gimmick. Like, he was so much fun, but like Luis just looks so much better this year. The fact that this is probably the first full season we're going to see of him healthy, I just can't wait to see what he accomplishes this year, because I think it could be a really special year for
Andrew Vaughn, though. I think so, too. Like, that guy, yeah. I remember hearing, like, either on talk show radios and other stuff like that, like, that's the guy that you would maybe trade away for another piece in that spot. But, like, I don't think you would do that with the guy Andrew Vaughn is, especially with an aging Jose Abreu, who's still as a top quality first baseman, one of the best in the league. But year after year, he's getting older. Mm-hmm. Vaughn can slide in that spot one day.
That just gave me post-traumatic stress disorder from like Monday night.
Yeah.
because I literally texted Leo because you guys told me I was going to be on the show.
Mm-hmm.
I told him I wanted to talk about the White Sox. And of course I go home after I send Leo the text of what I want to talk about. And like the first thing I see is like the White Sox are interested in the A's, Frankie Montas. And the whole offseason, like Andrew Vaughn has been held out as this trade bait. And instantly, like for like an hour or two, I was just refreshing Twitter. I was hoping that I wouldn't see that Andrew Vaughn would be traded out, because he is such an important part, not only of this team this year, but of our future with Abreu getting older. I think he's like 35, somewhere around then. Yeah. He still was one of the RBI leaders last year, but Andrew Vaughn is just such a, I think he's only played 55 games in the minors, and he's already like such a precocious, like, young player. He's shown immense growth within a year or two. I mean, not even 2 years. Yeah, it's been a year and like 6 games.
I mean, you look at his development, how he hasn't had the textbook development because of COVID and everything else, and he's still being able to do, he's basically been like a Swiss Army knife for this team, where he played every different position they needed him to last year, hitting different spots in the batting order, was a pinch hitter at times. And so we're not even seeing like a real development for him. He didn't get to go through the normal minor league progressions. He didn't get to play his natural position. He was learning at the big leagues, you know, thrown into the fire, and he's been able to thrive in it. So I think he is a player that could be really special. You forget he was a top 15 prospect in all of baseball last year and just put up a really solid campaign. So I'm excited just to see what it is he develops into as a major league player.
And it just seems like so many White Sox players used to be like top 15 prospects, you know, and it's interesting to see these guys finally come to fold, finally playing together, hopefully a full season, all together, healthy. It should be fun, but I want to go back to kind of the pitching, new additions to the bullpen with Joe Kelly coming in. And
he's been banged up too.
Yeah, he's been banged up, so he hasn't even pitched yet this year. But they also brought in Kendall Graveman, or was that last trade deadline? I know they brought him in
over the offseason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you guys feel about that? Because their bullpen has always been solid. I mean, Kimbrel maybe last year, but whatever.
We don't talk about that. Yeah. We traded Madrigal and Hauer for, like to say, we traded them for Harrison and Pollock.
Yeah,
we didn't trade them for Kimbrel. But
think of it that way, yeah.
The bullpen coming into the season, I think, was like the part of the team that I was worried about the least, just because we have so many arms that throw so fast, like in the bullpen.
Yeah.
And most of them, at least didn't have injury concerns like our starting lineup and our pitching, does. I thought I love the Graveman signing so far. He's been awesome. Like, he's been electric. He had a strikeout. He struck out the side, I think, or had two strikeouts or something like that. He had a scoreless inning at least, Seattle on Tuesday in our home opener. And he just, there's certain guys that just like fit the White Sox mold of just like these like I don't know, I don't want to say like blue collar, but like they're scrappy and they're insane. Like, our entire bullpen is just insane. We have probably the most electric, but also like the most mentally unstable bullpen in all of baseball. Like, I'm just so
adding Joe Kelly.
Just makes it
even more crazy.
It's nice to just have, like, for the most part, a bullpen that like won't throw the game away. Like, that's so important, especially in today of baseball, where your bullpen pitches like more than half the game sometimes.
Yeah, and my philosophy of pitching is always, you can never have enough of it, especially in the bullpen. And I think that's where Joe Kelly being hurt and then Garrett Crochet needing Tommy John, that hurts, because then you take away two, at worst, reliable arms that you know La Russa kind of trusts and can use. So that's where I think it's going to be interesting to see what they do next with Graven, with Kelly. But then now looking at Anderson Severino, made his MLB debut today. He was a lefty with some good stuff, and we saw him rack up a couple strikeouts. So if he develops into something, because now with Crochet being gone, you kind of want another lefty out of the pen. So just seeing what they do next, it's really going to test how deep they are. But going back to that, if there's one thing the White Sox have always done well, it's been identifying pitching. Mm-hmm. It's some of the other stuff they struggle with, but pitching, they always kind of seem to find it out of nowhere.
But one thing I want to ask about, this goes all to you. Joey Dwyer just got back in the studio here, but I want to ask, what will it take to get out of the AL? Because that's a loaded side in the MLB, and it's going to be a very difficult schedule.
That's a loaded question. It's luck, okay? You look at it last year. They won 93 games with a bulk of their without playing with their whole lineup. And then you just kind of go cold in the playoffs. You hit a hot team. You weren't hitting the ball out of the park. It's random. It's can you be the hot team in October? I got into that argument with Blake Hornstein on the show last year. Flipping the switch. I don't even think it's about flipping a switch. It's just about baseball's a streaky game. You either have it one week or you don't. Like, you look at Ryan Cermak, best player in the nation this week. He could just as likely go 0 for 13. We hope he doesn't. No. But, like, baseball's a home league sport. Sometimes you go cold. You don't have it. So it's just all about, are they hot in October or are they not? I think you keep everybody healthy, get them to the finish line, and then you put the chips on the table and see what happens, basically. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it's going to take, but just getting to October healthy is what I think they need to do. And I know that's a kind of a cop-out of an answer, but
I get that, though.
No, I just want to watch the White Sox play in October. It was such it was such a tease last year.
It really was.
It was such a, I skipped class to watch the game, and then they lost. I skipped class, then I saw Deb in the station Andrew, 10 minutes later.
Andrew, I'll ask you this. Do you think the roster right now is going to be what it's going to be come end of July?
No. I think there's going to be a couple trades. I think we're going to trade some of our quadruple A players for some, hopefully a pitcher. Well, I think the lineup as is fine once we get everybody back. I'm not worried about the lineup. I'm really just worried about the pitching depth.
Yeah.
And I think what's going to get us to October and get us through October is pitching and staying healthy. I really hope we make trades that make sense for the team. Obviously now, I don't think we need another bullpen pitcher. We don't need a Craig Kimbrel. And then we just need to do whatever it takes to keep Leury García from playing because I can't take it.
I love your tweets.
I did want to bring this up.
Andy P.
Because Andy P is such a Leury García hater. And I love the guy.
I love the guy.
Not because he's good at baseball, just because he's always there. He's always there, and it's just such a constant.
He doesn't have a hit this year.
No, I was going to bring up, we were talking about the lineups.
Doesn't have a hit this year.
Yeah, we were talking about Vaughn and playing him every day. What's been maddening is, La Russa makes it a point to not play Vaughn every day, but just to spite me, because then he puts Leury García, who is hitting, I'm not even joking, his slash line right now is 0-0-0. He hasn't even been hit by a pitch yet, and he's not been on base, and he plays every day, and he plays horrible defense, and I hate him with all my heart.
Yeah, he's played 4 games, 13 plate appearances, 13 at-bats, and those are the only stats it has on.
Oh,
everything
God.
Else is filled in with zero or negative.
He's got 4 errors, too, which is the best part. And meanwhile, Vaughn hits he had 6 RBIs against Detroit, and he's sitting on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And I could talk to Tony La Russa, the things I would say to that man is not what you should say to 79-year-old.
You gotta catch him with his hearing aids, and otherwise it's gonna all go right over his head.
Oh my God, so, yeah.
As much as, much stress as the White Sox give us, as much agitation as they cause, I can't wait. I'm excited just to have baseball back, to see where this ride takes us. But that's as far as this ride will take us on the Red Zone. When we come back, we'll be talking about something equally stressful and the Chicago Bears in the NFL draft. That's next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
This is Brady Davis from Redbird Football, and you're listening to Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to Red Zone. Leah Stoddard, Joey Dwyer, Joe Kennedy, and Andy Petrovsky's here too. But man, it breaks my heart hearing that Brady Davis bump because I still think if he didn't tear his ACL in 2019, that team was beating NDSU.
Remind me about
that
it,
that team
Leo.
Was going all the way, man.
Steve Cease would go against us and be like, no, they had no chance. But no,
defense was so good that year, and then you had James.
And they just needed one guy to throw the ball 10 yards.
And this is for Steve Cease, because he's not listening right now.
Oh,
he's going to listen tomorrow morning on his way in here.
Yeah.
You can pipe it, buddy. Yeah. That team was sick.
Team was.
You had an all-pro running back. You had one of the best defenses in the nation. Just oh man, that break, because remember, Joe, we were calling the game where he got hurt, and yeah. like he just knew oh, yeah. that's bad when he said
yep, yep. We could go on about that.
We'll do that show some other time. I don't know when we'll do that show, just talking about some Redbird football dudes, but we should do that show before we graduate. But yeah. let's talk about some NFL dudes, why don't we? Because we have, basically, here's what we have. Planning this show, we have 3 weeks left, 3 weeks to the NFL draft. Baseball's going on, NBA playoffs haven't started. We need to figure out a way to kill time because the three up, three down is over. So we don't want to just do the same riff about what should the Bears do in the draft this year? What do we need, man? What do we got? Who do we got to sign? Like, we don't want to just scout a bunch of prospects and stuff. We're not about that yet. So we're going to look at last year's draft and Monday morning quarterback this. Mm-hmm. We're nitpicking it. We're playing hindsight. That's what we're going to do here, because now looking back on it a year, there were some, almost everybody in this draft, at least
literally
main appearance.
Literally every single player on this list who the Bears took played in at least one snap over the season.
This is what I'm looking at, like, why I really wanted to talk about this, because I'm looking at these guys. You go Justin Fields, Tevin Jenkins, Larry Borum, Khalil Herbert, Daz Newsome, Thomas Graham Jr., Kyrus Tonga. I believe all these guys next year are going to come in and start. And
well, they're going to have to.
And no,
Bears had nobody left.
No, they did sign a... People don't realize, I mean, they're not high-quality names, but they signed about 13 free agents this year. They
signed
a lot
away.
They signed bodies, but... These are all guys I looked at that did show promise. At least Daz Newsome, it was training camp and preseason, then he got hurt. But he showed very well ability as a wide receiver in the sixth round. Thomas Graham, at the end of the year, he was probably the Bears, outside of Jalen Johnson, best cornerback on the roster.
Like, Thomas Graham should actually be the cornerback number two for the Bears next season.
Yeah.
Like, he really showed up and showed out late in the year.
And I think that's the thing that infuriates us about, and now that he's gone and departed, but Ryan Pace, the thing that infuriates us so much is that he finds guys like Thomas Graham in the sixth round, but then you look at the other early round picks. That's where he messed. He did the big things bad, but then finds a diamond in the rough like Thomas Graham. But I mean, talking about looking at where the new management, where they're putting, what baskets they're putting their eggs in. I don't know where I was going with that one, but I think they are relying a lot on Tevin Jenkins and Larry Borum to at least be serviceable tackles. I think they're putting a lot of faith in that, and you're putting your faith in Justin Fields in those two taking big steps next year.
Because right now the only automatics are the center they signed, could not remember his name, sorry, and then Cody Whitehair. Those are two for sure locks in at center and right guard. Tevin Jenkins will be there, but not quite sure if he's going to be right or left tackle, and then Larry Borum's probably going to be the opposite. They're still going to have to go through the draft and get through things. We'll talk about that at another time. But yeah, Leo, you're talking about, they traded up for Tevin Jenkins last year, a very big trade they had. And he did not start off well in this first game. I don't know if you guys remember, against the Packers. He had two big penalties.
Well, the problem is,
hurries.
I don't know why Tevin Jenkins even took a snap last year, dude, because his back was so messed up. And it's not like the Bears were contending. It's not like, oh, we need to rush this guy for the playoff push. Like, this team was bogus last year. Mm-hmm. There's absolutely no reason to put Tevin Jenkins out there. I have still, to this day, that boggles my mind. Why not just let him have the whole year to recover and then come back completely healthy? In the 2022 season.
But he did show some promise. I mean,
after
that Packers game, it was about like 80 pressures or 80 snaps. He only gave about 5 to 6 pressures during that time, and that's very good. He went up against, in his first game, the Packers offense or defensive line. Then he went against T.J. Watt and also a couple other guys on the lineup. And so it's just very interesting to see that. But the one that really liked about last year was Larry Borum, the guy out of Missouri. He kind of just came in there. He was injured at the beginning of the year, and he just started off very well for the Bears and putting in a spot that he probably had no idea he was going into.
That's a net positive from that draft, is where you find someone like that in the fifth round, and even Thomas Graham, where you find guys like that
late
in the
Herbert.
Draft. That, you're right. They really turn into starters. So that's a positive you can take away from. Obviously, you know, the one we haven't gotten into, the one draft pick we haven't discussed, Justin Fields, That's the home run pick. We hope that's the franchise quarterback. But then that's how you have to have success in the NFL. So you get it right in the first round, but then you have to find guys in the later rounds. And they kind of did that last year. Who knows how good those guys are going to be, but like at work, you found replacement level NFL players late in the draft, and that's big. That could set up well, and that's what they need to do again this year if they want any chance of building this thing into a contender at some point.
Looking at our prep doc for the show, somebody put in the question, has trading away so many firsts, three since 2018, hurt the team? Yeah.
Well, if you think about that, looking at 2 years ago, you're getting Khalil Mack. I mean, at the time, everyone was craving over that. And then, but the main question I was trying to put in there was, was trading away our first this year, the Bears' first this year, was it worth it getting Justin Fields? And, I think yes.
And that's
easily.
Yeah, like if Justin Fields is what he was billed as, absolutely it's worth it. But
and look at the quarterback class this year, mm-hmm. it is
and like
trash.
And like to do that, but to do that for Khalil Mack, I love Khalil Mack and I love what he was with the Bears and I will never ever forget that 2018 season.
Yep.
But
magical.
But yeah. The problem with Khalil Mack is he's one guy on a defensive team of 11.
Yeah, right.
Like, it's worth it for a quarterback because he runs your offense. Mm-hmm. Khalil Mack can only do so much on his own.
Here's my thing about trading the picks for Fields, because I'm in on Justin Fields. I think he could be special. I have so much fun, more fun than I should have watching the Bears watch
you
Fields
never
play.
Know. Yeah.
But I think you're doing a disservice to him, the fact that now not having those picks puts you in a tough spot to build a team around him because you have the quarterback, but what else do you have on the offense? What else do you have on the defense to maximize his talent? Are you putting him in a bad spot? That's what worries me about trading so many picks. And I know you had to do it to draft him.
That's the
you
thing.
Found your guy and you went for him, but now you're in this weird spot is, are they putting him in the best position to succeed? And that's what worries me. Last thing I want to see happen is him get hurt because he doesn't have the guys to block for him.
I think because the Bears are going to have 3 picks in the first 77 picks this year, they're going to have a capability to get some guys, especially how deep the wide receiver class is this year. But yeah, Leo, talking about the offensive line, that is a big question mark going into this
season.
I
just want them to protect our boy.
Yeah,
please.
It's going to be hard. But also one of the best things about Justin Fields last year was his ability to run. And he had 420 rushing yards, nice, but only had 19 designed runs in the game in the whole entire year. And you got to think of it that way. Like the way Matt Nagy was doing things for the Bears, like that was not capable for what Justin Fields was able to do as a quarterback.
That's what scares me. Like you're talking about Fields' running ability. There's a difference between running by design and running for your life.
Mm-hmm.
Like
exactly.
Look at Joe Burrow, and that's what I don't want to see with Fields. I am just so terrified because he is so special, and I don't want to see him mismanaged because he's in a bad spot.
But we've seen quarterbacks be able to be capable of playing well without an offensive line, especially the Joe Burrow situation. Joe Burrow is not a running quarterback at all. He had the worst offensive line mm-hmm. probably you could think of the past couple of years, and he still managed to make it to a big game. So, yeah.
I'm just excited to see where that goes. I think, too, looking at it, for the new management, you're almost relying on some of Ryan Pace's gambles to pan out. Is Cole Kmet going to turn into a number one tight end? You don't know. No. You better hope he does.
Hey, I saw some dude on Twitter say, fantasy breakout of the year next year, Cole Kmet. So.
Please, oh my God.
Cole Kmet's the second best athlete in his family. Casey Kmet, third baseman for the Northwestern.
You know what? Time out. Because for our uneducated audience, if you don't know, I am the president of the Illinois State Acapellas. One of the other Acapellas played baseball at St. Viator High School with both Cole and Casey Kmet. He sings the praises of Cole Kmet. He says Cole Kmet is the better athlete.
Okay.
So
well, with the Oilmen turned Casey into an
all-star. Okay,
back to Cole Kmet as a Chicago Bear, he's had his chances, but the way that the Matt Nagy and the offense was drawn up, it really wasn't designed for him to succeed. But you also got to look at it for Cole Kmet. He had a lot of drop passes, and like that's something that, I mean, you can work on, but that's kind of how you just are as a person. I mean, as a player, like a lot of guys can't fix their brick hands, but he does bring a lot of valuability. He's still a young player. You still see guys like that don't succeed right away at that tight end position in the NFL, and over time, it could get better.
Right. No, I mean, I think they're almost hoping he gets better because they don't have many other options at tight end. I'm ready to get hurt by the Chicago Bears. I'll say it.
This year is like it's not going to be a great year, and it's just going to be a, you know, I don't know how you want it, developmental year for everyone on the team, because it's going to be a young team. Not a lot of guys even know on the team anymore from last year.
And that's what's going to make it so much more fun if they do turn into, you know, championship contenders is we got to see them at rock bottom, I guess. But that's all we have for this week's show. We'd like to thank all of our guests, Ryan Cermak, Andrew Petrushevsky. We'd like to thank Scott Beeden for setting up that interview. If you missed any part of tonight's show, you can catch it in podcast form on our website in just a little bit. We talked about some Chicago White Sox, Chicago Bears, and drafting. We were getting in the nitty-gritty, talking about the draft, remaking last year's picks. And if you want to listen to Redbird Baseball, we'll have all 3 games this weekend, starting tomorrow at 4:50 versus Valparaiso. Big weekend for the Redbirds against the Beacons. That's all for the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
To hear this and other past episodes of the Red Zone again, Download the Red Zone Podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And, of course, tune into the Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.